repetitive, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Now, when we conduct GAM sessions, we discuss the individual models in the bureaus, but Sally requested a more general approach for today with some information on the artist whose portrait hangs on the entrance wall. Fortunately, a friend of mine dropped off this article that I am going to read to you. It was written in 1983 by Paul W. Campricos for the Cape Cod Life magazine. And it is so well written and so accurate that I have decided to read it so that you may better understand and capture the flavor of the times during the period in which the paintings, the murals, were painted and hung. It will take about 15 minutes, so please bear with me and I will inflict my dulcet tones upon you. The article is entitled 1930 Murals That Pleased, Puzzled, and Sometimes Angered Chapman. The year was 1910, and Alice Stalnick White, her husband Carol, and their 8-year-old son Frederick stepped off the train at the Old Colony Railroad Depot in Chatham and climbed aboard the horse-drawn wagon that would carry them, hopeful and uncertain, to the start of a new life. It was evening as that wagon left the station and rattled toward their lodgings at the Chatham House, recently demolished, on Cross Street. And the darkness lying on the quiet, sea-girt village enveloped them like a velvet cloak. Alice Stalnick was born in 1880 in New York City, grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey, and studied briefly at a New York art school. She married Carol White in 1901. Frederick, their only child, was born a year later. Carol White, and this is Carol White right here. Carol White was a natural scholar, but entered the world of business. The pressures took their toll. In 1903, he had a severe breakdown and turned to carpentry. Eventually, the Whites decided to leave their home in Philadelphia for a harbor of refuge, and Chatham was their choice. Chatham was worlds removed from the city bustle of Philadelphia. The town was little changed from colonial days. It had no electricity, no telephones, no streetlights, and only 2 cars. Its scant population included worldly sea captains who had sailed square riggers to China, put down a mutiny in the Pacific, and but for 5 white-collar professionals, most of the town's inhabitants scratched a hard living from the soil and sea. For the Whites, the years to follow were a struggle simply to feed themselves. Carol White fished and sculled and farmed their 5 acres near Stage Harbor. Frederick White would write much later that for his mother, the next 2 decades were years of anxiety, poverty, and dependence on relatives. In time, this emotional ferment produced an explosion of artistic genius that has become, artistic energy that has become appreciated only recently for its artistic genius. In the late 1920s, Carol White regained his health and pursued his studies of Greek at John Hopkins University, where he later became a professor. Nearly 20 years after she arrived in Chatham, and finally relieved of some family pressures, Alice Stalnick began to paint. And when she did, she painted with a power and strength that amazed those who knew her. Her paintings pleased some, puzzled others, and angered a few. Her style was innovative and forceful. It has been compared to the works of George Brooks and other German realists, but without their cynicism. Frederick White writes that his mother's painting was simply her way of seeing under emotional pressure, and as such, it was immediately complete. Her first paintings were shown at the Farragut Gallery in New York in 1931. They were merely a prelude. Alice Stalnick, as she signed her paintings, attempted to catch on canvas the fiercely independent character of her friends and neighbors, their basic humanity, and their deep-rooted spirituality. In the Chatham of the early 1990s, Frederick White recalls that everyone was on his own, as if you were at sea. Yet his mother was deeply involved in this environment. It was a whole world and refuge to her. She was able to view her neighbors as one large family and as a unifying theme that she could use in painting. She found in these neighbors her common denominator, and in the summer of 1931, she began painting a mural called Christ Preaching to the Multitude, which is to my left. The multitude were the members of the Congregational Church, known as the Atwood Church, because many of its people were from the Atwood family. They are dressed in contemporary clothes and stand or are seated on the shore, listening to Christ. Christ is God in work clothes and stands in a dory where two disciples man the oars. The character in his beardless face is strong and uncomplicated. The size of the mural, three panels with a total measurement of 9 by 20 feet, amplifies the impact. 3 years later, Alice Stalnick completed a mural twice the size of the first one. It was entitled The Circle Supper and depicted 52 Chatham townspeople, and that is the one on your right. Christ dressed again in work clothes is giving the benediction before a dinner. Although some supposed erroneously that the mural portrayed the Last Supper, the artist insisted that it was simply the traditional Wednesday night coming together in the church vestry. The mural has 20 separate panels, most of which show groups of three seated at a table. Christ is seated alone. Two people sit at another table where an empty chair is reserved for the viewer. Al Stalnick never revealed the name of the Christ model. She intensified or generalized his features to make them less identifiable. People asked who he was, says Frederick White, and my mother said quite flatly, she wasn't sane. It was possibly an open secret, however, he admits, that the model was the late Satan Slim Hutchins, a former Chatham selectman. Time was a factor in preparing the murals, so Alice Stalnick painted people she knew and only asked her models to stay for 1 hour. My mother painted very rapidly, and I've lost my place. Very rapidly, Mr. White remembers. She wore an apron that covered her from the neck down. She would quickly draw in the person's head with charcoal and fix it. And by the end of the hour, she had the head locked in. Full-length portraits took longer. It was quite a whirlwind when she was painting. There was paint all over the place. Her face was all painty because she held the brushes horizontally in her mouth. Her style, according to her son, might be described as impressionistic exaggeration. She was not a naive painter, but she was a naive person, and unaware of the nature of her work. Her approach sometimes startled those who expected a more photographic painting. Strangely, Frederick White muses, the less people knew about painting, the more they understood, perhaps instinctively, what the artist was trying to do. One of those pictured in the Circle Supper is Mrs. Albert N. Ivanoff. She is a lady in second panel up in the middle of the two older ladies, the younger person with brown hair. This is Ivanoff. I shouldn't take my eyes off of this. Oh, here we are. She was about 19 when Alice Stalnick called the house one night and said she would like to have me come and pose. The artist had a forceful personality, Mrs. Ivanoff recalls, and models, more often than not, were told, not asked, to pose. Mrs. Ivanoff's mother knew Alice Stalnick and gave permission for her daughter to pose. Many of us didn't know what we were posing for until it appeared later, said Mrs. Ivanov, nor was everyone pleased with the result. A lot of people thought she was caricaturing them, and the painters were greeted unenthusiastically, particularly by the older people. Personally, Mrs. Ivanov says she didn't object to the painting, but she notes that in the 30s, the realistic kind of painting was not very popular. When finished, the murals were installed in the front entrance and upstairs in the back balcony of the Congregational Church, where they elicited a mixed response. Some people were troubled at seeing religious paintings of any kind, to say nothing of portraits of their neighbors in a Protestant church. Others did not understand the impressionistic technique. It was a very small congregation, Frederick White recalled, with Atwoods on one side of the aisle or the other. The multitude were all cousins, more or less. Still, the angry, impressed, and curious alike were drawn to the church to view the murals. Financially, the murals were good news for the small church. The contributions of the many visitors made for a healthy toolbox. The murals not only attracted local comment, but drew national media attention as well. When Christ preaching to the multitude was placed in the church, it was reproduced in Time magazine over the caption, "Holy Dory." And that is in the showcase out there, if you will come in. The Surface Supper was given a full page in the last edition of the New York Roto-Gravure. Despite the acclaim the murals received, as each new minister arrived at the small church and saw the murals for the first time, Frederick White recalls that he proselytized the new man until he became adjusted to the paintings. During World War II, while he was abroad and couldn't do his usual selling job, the decision was made to remove the murals from the church. This could have been the result of a built-up resistance to the paintings and may or may not have been related to the new minister. Alice Stolnick had an old railroad freight shed moved next to her house, and the murals were hung there. The two murals took up exactly half the walls of the 20 by 40 foot shed. In 1945, she began to fill the blank wall with what many have called her masterpiece. Of course, you realize that we're in this shed, I really felt. Alice Stolnick had, the mural is called Every Man to His Trade. The central figure, once more, is Christ the Cosmo. We're speaking about this one here. Frederick White has described the canvas beneath the Christ figure with its dozens of town peoples as a Thanksgiving still life, and on either hand are the townsmen at their trades, fishermen, lobstermen, coral breakers, scallopers, oystermen, masons, builders, boarding house keepers. There are scenes of the town voting, of the town meeting, of the selectmen giving alms to the poor, of shipwrecked Nova Scotia fishermen being helped on their way home. During the 1950s, the small works of Alice Stolnick were shown at prestigious galleries in and out of the country. But the murals, whose powerful lines represented the flowering of her talent, were never exhibited outside Chapman, the gift, because she wanted them near her. They languished in the old shed where visitors were welcomed. When Alice Stolnick died in 1973, at the age of 93, the murals were taken to Los Angeles, where their fading colors were brightened with a hot wax process. William Agee, director of the Pasadena Museum of Modern Art, saw the murals and was so impressed by them that he arranged a 1977 showing at the Houston Museum of Fine Arts, where he had become director. The same year, the murals were exhibited at the National Portrait Gallery in Washington, D.C. Home for the murals would always be Chatham. Realizing this, a benefactor who had known Alice Stolnick contributed to the restoration of the railroad shed. It was attached to the Atwood House, owned by the Chatham Historical Society, and the gallery was dedicated in 1977 at a ceremony attended by Frederick White and some of the subjects of the paintings. Frederick White, a noted painter himself, as well as a prominent art critic, gallery director, and author of numerous articles and several novels, prefers not to think of the controversial road the murals traveled. I like to think of them as eventually being recognized, he said. They are a little more sanctified by time. Time has covered the controversy and brought forth comments more like those of Agnes Mongan, curator emeritus of drawings at the Harvard Fogg Museum. She wrote, "It has taken us a generation to recognize the eloquence, the aptness, and the historical relevance of the series. At the other end of the pictorial balance, it may be, but it is as perceptive in recording the Yankee ideals as the Italian frescoes were of Renaissance aims, and the world it represents has receded into almost a distant past. It was a world visible and recognizable from Cape Cod to beyond Mount Desert on the coast of Maine. More than those who passed their childhood summers on Cape Cod or on the Maine coast, who saw boats built, fish caught, and forests felled, who, though not members of a congregation, were yet welcomed, will have a sense of gratitude to the painter who has preserved with sympathy, understanding, and wit a vanished way of life." Thank you for your attention. And now I'm glad to answer any questions that you may have, if I can do so.
Or that Willie is our source of material too. Would you rather speak for a few minutes, or would you rather take some questions that are directed back and forth between you and your
office? Yes. Just assume, sit quietly and help Hilda answer any questions.
And so we've got double answer here.
Are there any questions?
Yes, where are you?
Pardon?
Yeah, yes.
Where am I?
You're not here.
Well, either the artist didn't think I had enough character in my face, or I had too much, so she didn't paint me.
Yep. Your brother.
My father and mother and brother are in the top right-hand panel next to the geraniums up there.
Father, mother, and brother.
Right. Yeah.
I see your question. Why you asked it?
How many people are still alive who are in the
Yeah.
Neighbors?
Oh, I wish Eleanor were here. She could tell you. The last count was, Millie, do you remember 11?
About 11, I think.
Before Lars Tuttle died recently. And of course, they would all be the younger ones who are children in the picture. Most of them are alive.
Mr. Small has died.
I'm sorry?
At that time, Mr. Small was still alive. He's in that picture right there. He was a selectman. But he has since died.
Oh, yes. A lot of them have died.
A lot of them have died.
They've all died, except about 10. And they would be the children.
Now, somebody told me they were one of the Girl Scouts. Who told me that? I can't remember.
That represents, you see, now this is what you didn't want me to get into. You want me to generalize.
Well, no.
So I will, if you want me to.
Now particularize.
But, I mean, you know, it can get to be lengthy. As the article says, this represents all the occupations in town. And that top panel represents the children's organizations. You have the Sea Scouts, the Boy Scouts, the Brownies, and the Girl Scouts. And that girl in the Girl Scouts there is Helen Hammond.
I think so.
Yeah, Helen
Hammond. You're not there?
I'm no Barry.
No.
I just live with all of them, but I'm not here.
Eddie Proudfoot.
Eddie Proudfoot, right. You see, Wood and I and Jane and I don't, maybe a few others, I can't remember, knew all these people. And I would say that when our generation is gone, there won't be anybody left that grew up with them.
Is that Emily?
No, that's Helen Wilson. Helen used to be Wilson.
Yeah.
John Wilson's sister. There's one thing that Hilda didn't say that maybe some of you people aren't aware of. On each side of the room, there's a pedestal with a sign, all the pictures in there, with all the names under each person. Some of you didn't realize that. Every person is named in each one of these things on each end of the room. So if you ever want to know who somebody is, all you have to do is look at that.
And if you become a docent for this barn gallery, I'm in the process of cataloging all the faces by number, who they were, what they did, and to whom they were related. And you'll find about 11 of them in here are Atwoods.
President of the, Dan, president of the Historical Society, says that they are in the process of purchasing a high-level tape recorder. And let's, while at least 10 people left, let's get some of them, some of this taping done. And anybody who is either an expert in that field of endeavor or care to become one, I think that would be a tremendous project for one of the docents to take on. Not only one, two or three files, but somebody thinks seriously about that. I just noticed I had before the nail wounds in the
Oh yes, in Christ's hand, you see where the nail wounds.
Certainly no denying it's a Christ, it's supposed right. to be Christ's nail.
No.
Yes. Who are the old librarians?
Edna Hardy was an old librarian when we were kids.
She's up here.
Edna Hardy's up here somewhere.
Oh, she is.
This lady right here, Edna Hardy, who is an aunt to Bob Hardy, this lady right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this one here is her mother.
Is her sister there too?
No.
No, I don't think so.
This lady here, Mrs. Smith, what's her first, do you remember her first name, Millie? I don't have wouldn't know I don't know. She was the widow of Willie Smith who wrote The History of Chatham.
Oh, that's
you can see how proper she was
with oh, yeah.
She probably would have worn a turtleneck in this thing.
Did Alice live from there at Stage Harbor? Is the house still there?
The house is still there. Yeah. And if you go down, when you get to Bridge Street on your left, go right by it. I think, will it correct me, I think it's the next house on the right.
Kind of last side. House on the right before you turn to go up the hill.
Is it that
before
one?
You get to the list, this is what she sits back first.
Right, it's sits back.
White House.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that's where this shed sat. When she moved it down there and back in the fields. And then, as you heard me say, somebody, the benefactor, paid for it to be moved up here. And is that where the storage room is? I'm in here.
I don't know. Oh, yes.
Yes.
We have a big storage area under this building now. Mrs. Nye was she's still living.
Where did the building come from originally? I mean, was it up
from
here?
The railroad depot?
Up right up here in Chatham?
Right. Oh, yeah. Shit. Where the museum is, the railroad depot. It was off on one of the spurs, the track spurs. Some say it was a shed. I say it was the old engine barn. And who knows?
Are there any descendants of white
I don't,
are alive.
No, I don't think so, because, see, well, her son has recently died.
Yeah, already, that.
And I don't know where the widow is.
Do they
know?
Have children?
Ned knows.
All right, see the first panel up there, beside the church fire? All right, that is her son and daughter-in-law and grandson. That son has recently died, and it was the grandson, I believe, who was instrumental and getting these murals all out to California to have them, the hot wax process, which I guess, they did a beautiful job.
I think he did some of it himself.
Now,
that was George White.
Yes.
He's a baby.
The baby, yes.
George was at that time a conservator in the Los Angeles County Museum, and he and his friends got together and restored the paintings.
I gave George's.
Sorry.
I can say I gave George's first bath when he came home from the hospital.
You did?
Yes.
You did?
Yes. His mother was afraid to. I had a 6-month-old baby there.
So you knew how?
Yes. And he was slippery as a frog.
George is still alive, living in California. He is now, I think, a sculptor. At one time, he did some painting, but his mother, who is still alive in Los Angeles, wrote the other day and said that he was no longer interested in painting. So he's not doing painting anymore, painting himself. He was here to see the murals in this location. And he wonderful gift to bring the barn up and put it in place. And we decided that we needed to have storage areas so the full basement underneath here is there with a small vault, fireproof vault as well. But I wanted to say that Frank Hutchings, Slim's son, was president of the Historical Society before Willard was. And when he said that when he brought his children in to see the murals, they said, oh, Grampy.
Oh, my.
When they looked at that. So there was enough to be recognized.
Slim, as he used to be called, ran a car repair shop.
A garage on Pauline's Road where the Texaco station is now. He called it Slim's, Slim's Garage on Pauline Flat. Name and location. Slim's Garage on Pauline Flat.
My family at that time, my father was very much a summer person, and but quite active. I think he was quite active in the local. So he used to attend every summer person's meeting and work on it very hard. Later on, he was told that Slim had been quoted, let them all talk to you during the summer. Well, we tracked it all in the fall.
I think we're talking about the summer town meeting, no doubt.
Yes.
And we'll be told in the fall. Well, no one else has any questions?
How about, I would like to just get up and walk around and look and...
Do I
remember a picture of George Washington and some politician
over
in
Alabama? I'd like to talk
before they get. I think that was
true, wasn't it, Sheila? I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Portraits of Washington and others that she had done.
What about them? I never saw them.
She also did Salt and Stall and some other people, but
I never saw them.
Some of those, I think, were sold. I don't think any are in the Parker Gallery in Kent, Washington, because at that time, when these were shown there, they were privileged to go there because they were portraits from life. And at that time, the Parker Gallery, the National Portrait Gallery, accepted for a display only portraits from life. So Salt and Stall and the others were defined. Now, where they are now,
referring back to the article that I read, as you remember, it mentions that there was a great deal of controversy within the church about this mural and that mural being hung. And of course, she is correct when she said this is the vestry, the church supper. I attended many of them with many of these people there. And it was very true that the controversy raged about these murals. People even said they were sacrilegious. And get them out. So anyway, I mean, you know, it was a very narrow-minded town. And it was true. There were many, many outlets on both sides of the aisle. And I don't think it had anything to do with the minister. I think you'll find that the congregation finally said, pick them out. Yes.
There was one thing that I remember about the Salt and Star painting was he was presenting a medal of honor to a soldier, and he had just lost his own son.
Oh.
And I always thought that was a beautiful thing. And I knew.
Piece of silver back here is presented to by the Congregational Society of the Church, so at least some of them.
That probably was done after they took it off. I was away during those years, so I don't know what happened.
Wasn't it also true, though, that at least one minister found it disconcerting to be standing in the pulpit concerned with these portraits there?
Because they distract us.
It is.
That would be the one in the back balcony.
Yeah.
when he was preaching from the pulpit, all these faces here were looking at him.
Can't you imagine how he tempted to try to match the faces in front of him?
In conclusion, I just have to tell you this. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Bert and I records from the Down Main Humor. Well, my son gave me a tape recently called Postcards from Maine. Now, the reason I'm telling you this little bit is because part of it, to me, is chatter. And this man says to the audience, he said, well, he says, there's three types of people up here. He said, there are the natives, you know who you are, and I am one, and my record's out in the hall. And he said, and then those are people who have moved in, and you know who you are. And he said, and then you've got your transplants, and you know who you are. Now, he said, there's nothing wrong with any of that, with any of those people in those groups that find people. The only problem comes when one group tries to slide over the other.